April 8th, 2014, in Radha Desh Raja. Appearance day of Lord Ramachandra. Can everybody see the screen well? So we can sing this together. Vitarasi dikshurane dikpatim kamaniyam. Dasamukamolim balim ramaniyam. Vitarasi dikshurane dikpati kamaniyam. Dasamukamolim balim ramaniyam. Dikshurane dikpati kamaniyam. Dasamukamolim balim ramaniyam. Keshavadvita rama sharira. Jaya Jagadish Hare. Jaya Jagadish Hare. Maybe we can make it a little louder.
The next order is Ramchandra. So the Ravan, who had 10 things, he challenged the Lord. And Lord Ramchandra took up the challenge and killed him.
So we start with Valmiki. That Valmiki asked Narada, who is the best person? Actually, this is. I'm going to move this a little bit, otherwise. Otherwise, I can't afford to do this all the time. Yes. Thank you. He was asking Narada, who's the best person? And Narada told him, Ramchandra. And then Valmiki was out, he was meditating on how to write something on Ramchandra, and he was out and he saw a hunter kill a male bird while it was mating. And in his anger, he cursed the hunter, and his curse came out in perfect poetry. And when he was wondering about why he had gotten so angry at this hunter, Brahma came and said, this particular poetic meter that you've spoken in cursing of the hunter is exactly suitable for writing the Ramayana. So Valmiki started to write the Ramayana. So we're going to start the story with Dasarath, who had no sons. And there's a lot in the scripture about people being really in anxiety about having a son, yes? And one of the reasons, by the way, the color there is not very good. It's like kind of washed out. Is that just the way the projector is? It is. Oh, what a shame. So the reason that these kings were in so much anxiety about having a son is that part of their duty as the king was to arrange for a successor. When you're running something, part of your duty is to make sure it goes on after you retire, after you die. So he was told that he should get Rishyashringa to perform a sacrifice. An interesting story about Rishyashringa: he was raised in the forest by his father, and he didn't know anyone else other than his father. So Romapad, King Romapad, had been told to get this Rishyashringa to marry his daughter, who was actually Dasarath's daughter, but she was being raised by Romapad. And that he had to get this Rishyashringa into his kingdom to marry his daughter in order to get rain. So King Romapad had arranged for some courtesans to go to the forest and tempt Rishyashringa into the capital. And because he'd never seen a woman in his life, he had no idea that these were even women. He didn't even know there was such a thing as a woman. So when he started becoming attracted to them, he didn't know what was happening. They gave him all kinds of cooked sweets. He'd only had forest fruits up until that time. He thought it was some kind of strange fruit. And he's like, well, I want to go with these people and eat their fruits. And that way he was brought to King Romapad's kingdom and married Romapad's adopted daughter, who was actually Dasarath's daughter. Which is a very nice example of the principle that the way to sense control and the way to detachment is not simply by putting yourself in a box. That if you do that, as soon as you're in touch with material life, you'll become bewildered. In any case, Dasarath asked for his friend Romapad, King Romapad, to send Rishyashringa, and Rishyashringa did two sacrifices. One was a horse sacrifice, and this other was a sacrifice specifically for his son, where he gave Dasarath this payasa. So in ancient times, they had all sorts of interesting ways of dealing with infertility and birth, and there's all sorts of amazing stories in the Shastra like that. So Dasarath took this payasa, and he gave half to his chief queen, Kausalya, and then he also gave some to Sumitra, then he gave a smaller portion to his youngest queen, Kaikeyi, and then he gave another portion again to Sumitra. After which point, the three queens had four children. Sumitra had twins, Bharat and Shatrughna. Lakshman and Shatrughna. Kaikeyi had Bharat, and Kausalya gave birth to Ram. Ram was born from the chief queen, and he was born first, so he was considered the next heir. And Dasarath was so happy. Not only did he get a son, he got four sons, and not only did he get four sons, but his four sons were all divine. So sometimes they're explained, generally Prabhupada explains these four sons as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. Although at least one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he explains them as Vishnu, Sesha, the conch, and the disc. So they're understood in different ways at different times. And the Lord had appeared because the demigods were complaining. Oh my, the colors are so bad there. Makes me want to cry. The demigods were complaining about demons on the earth and demons in the universe, and so the Lord had agreed to come, and they were particularly complaining about Ravana, and we find often that these demons get some sort of a benediction from the demigods. So Ravana got a benediction that he couldn't be killed by any demigod, but he hadn't bothered to get a benediction that he couldn't be killed by humans or animals, because he figured, why bother? You know, it's like, would you get a benediction that you couldn't be killed by, ants? You probably wouldn't think about it. Although there are ants in the world that can kill humans. So he didn't think about that. Therefore, Vishnu took the form of a human being. And he was raised with great love by his mother, Kausalya. Of course, also by his other two stepmothers. And then, following the proper procedure for human life, Dasarath arranged for his children to become brahmacharis and get proper training in school. And Srila Prabhupada says that the brahmachari ashram, the gurukula, is meant for teaching values and teaching practical training for a livelihood. So here we see the brothers learning archery, and they learned the shastra. They also learned political science and everything that they would need to themselves become rulers. So one day when they were about 16 years old, Vishwamrita came to see Dasarath. Vishwamitra is himself a very interesting person. He had been a Kshatriya, and he went to visit Vasistha, who was the guru of Dasarath. And Vasistha entertained him by providing an unlimited meal from an unlimited cow. Vasistha became envious, wanted the cow. Vishwamitra became envious. Vasistha wouldn't give the cow. There was a huge battle. And finally, Vishwamitra decided that he would become a Brahmana and gain Brahminical powers. So after thousands and thousands of years and a couple of mess-ups, one where he became lusty after Menaka and one where he became angry at Rumba, he finally attained the position of a Maharshi in the universe. He became equal to Vasistha. So he was performing a sacrifice. He came to visit Dasarath, and Dasarath said to him, "How are you doing with conquering birth and death?" And Prabhupada talks about this a lot, that when you meet people, that how are you depends on what's their position. So Vishwamrita said to Dasarath, "How is your kingdom? How is your family?" And Dasarath said to Vishwamrita, "How is it going with conquering birth and death?" So very, very personal what you ask of someone. And Vishwamrita said, "Well, everything's going well, my king, except that we're doing this sacrifice and we have these demons disturbing it. Please give me your son Ram to kill the demons." And Dasarath, you know, as soon as Vishwamrita had entered, he said, "My dear sage, how can I serve you? I'm willing to do anything to serve you." And then when Vishwamrita asked for the two, for actually just for Ram, then Dasarath said, "No, forget it. He's only 16. He's never been in a battle. These are great demons. Even I don't know if I could kill them. There's no way I'm going to send Ram." And then Vishwamrita got very angry. "You said you'd just serve me, and now you're not going to do anything." And then Vasistha came to Dasarath. Vasistha was Dasarath's guru, and said, "Listen, this Vishwamrita could kill the demons himself, so don't worry about it." So at that point, Dasarath said, "Okay," called for Ram. Lakshman also came. He said, "Both of you go with Vishwamrita and serve him." So as they were traveling, he gave them mantras called Bal and Atibal, by which they could conquer all fatigue and have unlimited strength. He also taught them about the descent of the river Ganga, and he brought them to the ashram of Gautam Muni and Ahalya, where Ram freed Ahalya from the curse of her husband. Ahalya had a benediction that she would never look older than 16. And Indra was very attracted by her beauty. He took the form of her husband, and she knew that it wasn't really her husband, but she said, "All right, I'll consort with you." And unfortunately, they were caught by her husband, who then castrated Indra and cursed his wife to remain in a position like a stone in the ashram until Ram came. But what's interesting is that when Ram came and touched Ahalya, that she was completely free from the lust that had inspired her in the first place. She was free from the curse, and then she became reunited again with her husband. That once one becomes purified, everything is finished, everything is forgotten. It's not that a person becomes purified and then you still remember something of the past. Then they went to a forest that was very desolate. And when Ram asked the reason, Vishwamrita told him the story of Taraka, who had been cursed to become a Rakshasi. Basically, she had been eager for vengeance. Complicated story, and so she had been cursed. And he told Ram to kill her. So at first Ram just simply wounded her because he didn't want to kill a woman. And then Vishwamrita insisted she needs to be killed. Although she's a woman, she's very evil. So then they killed Taraka, and her son Subhagu and Maricha, they were coming to pollute the sacrifice. This is why Vishwamrita had gone to Dasarath originally. So they were doing this yajna, and then periodically Maricha and Subhagu would throw blood and bones, as you can see here, and desecrate the sacrifice. So this kind of thing has been going on since the beginning of time, that in this material world there's conflict between the devotees and the demons. So we should expect that whenever we're trying to do something wonderful for Krishna, whenever we're trying to do a yajna for Krishna, whenever we're trying to spread Krishna consciousness, we should expect there are people going to pollute it. That should be our expectation. I mean, I was thinking today about how when Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati initiated people who were not born in Brahmin families, that the shopkeepers in Vrindavan closed their doors. People were throwing stones at his Sankirtan party, and there was even a threat to kill him. You know, when Prabhupada first took the non-Indians to India to start the Sankirtan movement, right, there was so much criticism. And even now we have criticism like that, sometimes even from within our movement. But there's criticism like that. You know, well, listen. And people trying to stop the Sankirtan Yajna. So this has been going on from the beginning of time in the material world, whether people are trying to pollute Yajna with bones and blood, or whether they're trying to pollute Yajna with stones, or whatever it may be, with propaganda. So Ram decided that he wasn't going to kill Maricha. He simply sent Maricha thousands of kilometers away into the ocean, and he killed Subahu. Now, of course, Vishwamitra could have himself killed the demons. He had the Brahminical power. But because he was, at that point, a Brahmana, he understood that's not my duty. So this is a very, very important principle. I remember some years ago, I went to Burjan Prabhu about something I was upset about. And I said, Burjan Prabhu, I'd like to get this fixed. And he looked at me and he said, but it's not your service. It's not your area of service, right? Even modern managers talk about this, your area of influence, right? And your area of concern. So if we're really servants, we should know, what is my area of service? That's what it means to be a servant. Not that I'm a servant, but I just do whatever I think needs to be done. So Vishwamitra understood this, that although he saw the problem, and although he had the power to fix it, he knew that if he used his power to fix it, that it would be a disturbance. So we should know, what is my area? What is the area that Krishna has given to me? What is the area the Guru has given to me? And not go beyond that area. I mean, unless there's a life or death emergency that immediately has to be taken care of. So then after the killing of Maricha and Subahu, the sacrifice was completed. And Vishwamitra and the sages said, would you please come with us? We are going to... Where were they all going? Mithila. They said, we're going to Mithila, and we're going to assist with King Janak, who's having a wonderful sacrifice. So when they went, they saw the invincible bow of Lord Shiva, which could only be carried by hundreds of men. And Ram picked up the bow easily with his left hand, strung it easily, although no one else had been able to even budge it. And not only did he string it, he broke it. At which point, Janaka accepted that Sita would marry him, because he'd vowed to give his daughter to whoever could lift this bow. So then invitation was sent out to Dasarath to come for the wedding, and Dasarath came, and he brought his other two sons with him. And then when they were all meeting, the families were meeting, they talked about their lineages, and the sages there suggested, really, Dasarath, not only should you give Sita to Ram, but you should give your younger daughter, Urmila, to Lakshmana. And then they also suggested, what about the two daughters of your younger brother, Kushadraj? You should give them Mandavi and Shrutikirti. You should give them in marriage to Bharat and Shatrughna. So then there was a great quadruple wedding.
The woman called to their friends, come, 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 see this beautiful exchange. Look at the beautiful Sita. See the handsome Ram.
So it was a wonderful wedding. Everybody was very happy. And then Ram's family all started to return to Ayodhya. But on the way, they met Parashuram. So Parashuram, who'd killed the Kshatriyas 21 times, he came and said, ah, okay, you've broken the bow of Shiva, but what about the bow of Vishnu? And then Ram easily strung the bow of Vishnu. Of course, it was his own bow. And at that point, he said, I put an arrow on my bow. What should I do with it? And he took away Parasaram's right to enter the heavenly planets. He took away his acquired merit. and he simply allowed him to stay at Mahendra Mountain. So the influence of Parasuram on the earth at this time was finished. Ram was starting the great Kshatriyas who no longer needed Parasuram to keep them in check. So then Sita and Ram had many, many years in Ayodhya, I think about 12 years, where they were living very, very happily in Ayodhya. Then during this time, Dasarath realizes that he's becoming old, and that it's time for him to renounce the kingdom. So in those days, the kings didn't rule until they died, but they ruled until they had a proper person to rule. So the concept of keeping a position until you die is not Vedic. That in the Vedic society, you let go of managerial concerns and basically let go of your varna, whether you're Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, let go of your varna. And you take time at the end of life to take up spiritual life. Of course, we have a concept of this even in the West, the concept of retiring, that you get to a certain age, whatever it is, 60, 65 in most Western countries, and then you retire from your work. Of course, generally when people retire in the West, they just play golf or they play cards or something like that. But the Vedic idea was you retired and then you concentrate fully on your spiritual life. And you should retire as soon as you have a successor. So we see this as a great urge in the Bhagavatam, the Ramayana, that I have to have a successor, I have to have a successor, I have to have a successor, I have to have a worthy successor. And as soon as that worthy successor is mature, then I immediately retire. I don't hold on to my position as long as possible. So Dasarath decided that it was time to enthrone Ram as the king. But he said to Ram, I'm having some bad dreams of something inauspicious, and therefore I think that I should enthrone you immediately. I don't think that I should wait. He said, even though your brothers Bharat and Shatrughna are visiting Bharat's family, they're not here. Generally, if you're going to have some big occasion, you want the whole family here. And he said, even though I didn't have time to consult with Bharat's grandfather, still I have this urge that I have to act immediately. He said, so we will do the coronation tomorrow. And of course, he had consulted with all the ministers and all the citizens who were more than enthusiastic to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead be their king. Well, as Krishna Kshetra was saying this morning, there was one person who wasn't happy, and that was Manthara. Manthara was a hunchback servant who is described in Valmiki's Ramayana, had been an apsara in a previous life, sent by the demigods to facilitate the killing of Ravana. And she had been a servant of Kaikeyi since Kaikeyi's childhood. So Kaikeyi really saw her as like a mother figure and an authority. And Manthara first comes and tells Kaikeyi, there's something terrible, Rama's going to be the king. Kaikeyi says, well, that's wonderful. Please take this necklace for giving me this good news. And Manthara throws it on the ground and says, you fool, don't you understand that you're going to be the slave of your co-wife, Pausalya, and your son will become the slave of Ram. So this is a problem in royalty from the beginning of time, this conflict over power and this concept of, you know, I have to be the best. It's a real problem with royalty. We see like that Kamsa was willing to kill his nephews in order to assure himself of the throne. We saw in the story of Dhruva, right, that Suruchi was willing to insult her stepson in order for her son to gain the throne. So this is a very common theme throughout the history of the world. And Kaikeyi fell into this trap that, you know, well, I really want my son to be in charge. And she hadn't thought that way at first, but when she thought of things in terms of friends and enemies and in terms of power, then she got into that space. So this is a very important thing for all of us, to be aware of this friends and enemies mentality. To be aware of thinking, you know, somebody's out to get me and I have to do something to protect myself. I mean, Kaikeyi is not an ordinary living entity. She's the mother of Bharat. She's basically the mother of Ramchandra. She's not an ordinary person. She's a pure devotee of the Lord. What to speak of her understanding of Dharma. But we see here that through bad association, she got into this mood of, first of all, friends and enemies, and second of all, I don't want to be a servant. I don't want my son to be a servant. I want to be a position of power. I mean, generally the mood would have been, well, if I'm Kausalya's servant, so what? If Bharat is Ram's servant, so what? How glorious to be the servant of Ram and Kausalya. But she got into this mentality of the mode of passion. So we should be very, very careful. Of course, this is all part of Leela, it's all part of pastimes, but still the message is there for us, that even if we're a devotee, even if we're very advanced in Krishna consciousness, that it is possible by bad association to start thinking more of our position and our prestige and think that people are our enemy. And when she did this, she ruined everything. She ruined everything. I mean, she destroyed from every perspective. She followed Mantara's advice and she went into the room of lamentation. She tricked her husband into giving her the benediction to enthrone Bharat and banish Ram, at which point her husband renounced her and eventually died. And then Bharat also renounced her. So she lost everything on every level. And she had to spend so many years lamenting for this decision. So better to follow Dharma and better to follow the will of the Lord, even if it means that by doing so, our position is apparently diminished. To give up Dharma, what to speak of, to give up the highest Dharma of surrendering to Krishna for the sake of material prestige or to conquer our enemies, we lose everything. And the Ramayana is full of this concept that even if I have to suffer by following Dharma, apparently if I have to suffer, it's better to follow Dharma and better to please the Lord than to get some immediate happiness. So we have examples on both sides. Here we have an example of Kaikeyi, who made this mistake. And she insisted that Ram leave immediately, that he leave the next day and that he wear garments of bark and not stay in any city. And then, of course, when Ram told his mother, she wanted to go with him, and he said, no, you have to stay and serve your husband. But then Sita insisted. She said, you've told your mother to serve her husband, then what about me? I have to serve my husband. She said, you know, just like even today, we have the marriage vows, richer, poorer, right? Happiness, distress, richer, poorer. So that's the concept of marriage is not, well, I marry you, and if there's a problem, goodbye. That's not love. It's something else. So Sita said, you know, I'm sorry. I'm following you. If you've been sent to the forest and I've also been sent, I'm half your body. And Ram finally accepted. And then Lakshman said, well, I'm coming too. And I'm going to come and protect you. So Ram also accepted that. And here we see Vasistha is chastising Kaikeyi, and Dasarath is in great mourning. And Ram finally gets the blessings of his mother to go to the forest. She gives him wonderful benedictions. At first, she's protesting. When she sees his resolve, she said, yes, may you go and always be happy. So then they left in a chariot to go to the forest. And at first, all of the residents of Ayodhya were also following. They said, let us take Ayodhya to the forest and let Ayodhya become vacant and let the forest become our Ayodhya. But Ram could see that they were in difficulty by following them. So when they were still sleeping, he told Sumitra to maneuver the chariot in such a way that they wouldn't be able to follow. And he crossed the river Tamasa. And then he came to the village of Guha. So Guha was a tribal chief, a Nisada, but a great devotee. And one of the wonderful aspects of this incarnation of the Lord, Ramachandra, is that not only does he have many human devotees, but he also has many animal devotees, and among the humans, he has members of civilized and uncivilized society, that Ram doesn't discriminate, that anybody who loves him becomes his devotee. And so we have, of course, the civilized humans of Ayodhya, here we have the uncivilized tribals, we will have later the demon Babishana, we will have the vulture Jatayu, right, monkey Hanuman, and so forth. And Guha came and said, why don't you stay here with me? And Ram said, well, that's not really the terms of my exile. The terms of my exile is I have to just live in the forest. And the whole reason why Ram was accepting this exile was to make his father be a truthful man. that his father had told Kaikeyi, you know, I'm going to give you two boons, whatever you want. Kaikeyi said, I want these two boons. And Ram said, I can't make my father a liar. So this is the view of the Lord towards his devotee, that whatever the devotee said, the Lord wants to uphold it. And the Lord's willing to break his own promise, but he doesn't want to do anything to make the devotee look like a liar. So even to this extreme, I mean, he could have said, well, I'm in the forest. You know, he could have lived there and been treated royally by Guha, but he said, no, that's not the terms. The terms is I can't live in a city. I actually have to live in exile. And he said, and even if I live outside your city, everybody will know I'm here and they'll all come to visit me. Better that I cross the Ganga, that I go deep in the forest where no one can find me. So that night, Lakshman kept guard. And then the next day, Guha arranged for a boat to cross the Ganga. And the boatman asked that his only payment was to wash the lotus feet of Lord Ramchandra. And as they were crossing the Ganga, Sita prayed to the Ganga that please may we return safely to Ayodhya. And as they came to the borders of Ayodhya, Ram said goodbye to his land and entered deep within the forest. He came first to the hermitage of Bhardwaj. And Bhardwaj told them that there were many rakshasas that were attacking the sages. And so Ram said, I will vow to protect the sages from the rakshasas. Now before Ram had left Ayodhya, he'd called for a lot of different weapons. He'd asked Lakshman to bring some weapons with them. So they did come armed. But Sita asked him after he takes this vow, why are you vowing to fight? You're in exile. You know, you're living like a vanaprastha. You're not in the kingdom. You don't need to protect the kingdom. And he said, well, not really. He said, I'm still a kshatriya. He said, I really haven't given up my kshatriya duties. I'm here as the representative of Bharat. He says, in any case, I already promised. So meanwhile, Sumitra goes back to Ayodhya without Ram. Dasarath had some hope that Ram would refuse to go into exile. And he had some hope that somehow Sumitra could get him to return. But when Sumitra, who you see here in this picture, when Sumitra returns without Ram, then Dasarath was devastated. And Dasarath then remembered a story that when he was very young, he had the power to hunt by sound. And one time, testing this power, he heard a baby elephant drinking from a stream. And just going by the sound, he shot the elephant. But after shooting the elephant, the sound that came out of the elephant's mouth wasn't an elephant sound. It was a human sound. And when he rushed to the spot, he saw that what he had heard was not an elephant drinking, but it was a young Brahmin boy filling his pitcher. And the boy told him, he said, I'm the only support for my aged and blind parents. Said, you will have to tell them that you killed me. You can't just leave them waiting for me. So Dasarath went to the parents and he said, I'm so sorry. I killed your son by accident. I didn't mean to. Please forgive me. And they said, you're the royalty. You're supposed to be protecting the brahmanas. And you've taken away our only source of support, our only help. How are we aged and disabled and blind? How will we take care of ourselves without our son? In fact, without our son, we are going to immediately die. May you also die in separation from your son. So Dasarath remembered this story, and in that state he died. Of course, it's quite interesting, because to die in intense separation from Ram is the most glorious death. And right before this, Dasarath had become detached from who he felt great detachment from? Kaikeyi. That was quite interesting. So he became completely detached from Kaikeyi, and his attachment to Ram, which was already there, became intensified and intensified and intensified. When Kaikeyi had asked for the boons, he said, my dear Kaikeyi, I love Ram more than you, but other than Ram, you are the person that I love the most in the world. But at this time, when he died, he loved only Ram. And he loved only Ram with great intensity. This is the definition of prema given by Rupa Goswami, actually quoting Bhishma, when all of one's feelings of kinship are reposed in the Lord. So we may see in our lives that things happen that from a material perspective are very difficult. Or it may appear even that this was some sort of karmic reaction. But really that wasn't the case at all. It was simply a device that the Lord was using to bring his devotee closer to him. So meanwhile, as soon as Dasarath dies, then there's no king. What to do? Until Dasarath died, everybody had just left the situation alone, but as soon as he died, the messengers went to get Bharat and Shatrughna and bring them back from the kingdom of Kaikeya. And they didn't tell Bharat and Shatrughna what had happened. They just said, your presence is needed urgently back home. And Bharat started having very bad dreams. And when he comes home, he sees that everybody's in mourning and nobody will look at him. Everyone assumes that he was involved with his mother's plan, that it was a conspiracy. And Bharat has to take quite a bit of trouble to convince everybody that he had nothing to do with this. And he also renounces his mother. And when Prabhupada talks about that one can renounce one's authorities for the service of the Lord, he gives the example of Bharat who renounced his mother. He said, you're not my mother. I reject you because you have done something against Ram. He says, not only will I not accept the kingdom, but I will go into the forest and I will find Ram and I will convince him to come back and take the kingdom. Of course, he couldn't do that because Ram couldn't be convinced by Lakshman. He couldn't be convinced by Kausalya. He said, I'm sorry. I'm going to follow my father's orders. I'm going to keep my father a truthful man. And Bharat said, but I'm not going to rule the kingdom. Forget it. You know, I wasn't given any direct order and I'm just not participating in this. I think it's wrong. So finally they made an agreement that although Bharat was supposed to be the king, that he would only rule as Ram's representative. That actually Ram would continue to be the king and that Bharat took Ram's shoes and put the shoes on the throne. And consider that those shoes represented Ram as the king with Bharat as the servant. And then Bharat lived for those 14 years doing more austerities than Ram and Lakshman was doing in the forest. Well, Ram had promised to kill the demons, and pretty soon he had an opportunity to do that. Virad had been in league with Vitapi and killing many, many sages by having them eat Vitapi and then Vitapi coming out afterwards. Augusta had digested Vitapi. And Virad, angry at all the sages, was trying to eat them. So he tried to kidnap Sita and destroy Ram and Lakshman, but instead they destroyed him. So the brothers had, for quite a while, they were killing various demons and they lived at Chitrakoot with some of the sages. But overall, they had a very happy time in the forest, living in Chitrakoot, eating roots and berries and fruits, seeing the wildlife. And in one sense, it was like a long vacation from royal responsibility. Then at a certain point, they met with Sage Agastya and they moved to Panchavati, deeper into the forest. When they went to Panchavati, they ended up being right on the border of where the demons had an outpost. In fact, that was one of the main reasons they went there. They thought, instead of just randomly killing the demons that come to us, why don't we go towards their outpost? But when they went towards the demon's outpost, there was a particular demon that took notice of them. And she was like, oh, that Ram is very handsome. I think that I would like to marry him. Huh? And using her powers, she changed her form into that of a beautiful human. But Ram said, I'm sorry, I've taken Ekpat Nivrat. Generally, the rulers in those days had many wives, but he said, I'm only going to marry one wife, and I already have my wife here. He said, but you could marry Lakshman. He hasn't taken such a vow, and his wife is back in Ayodhya. You could become his second wife. And Lakshman said, look, I'm just a servant, and you're a princess. Why would a princess want to marry a servant? It wouldn't be a very nice life. You marry Ram. And Ram said, no, you should marry Lakshman. And then she says, the problem is Sita. So she attacks Sita, after which point Lakshman cuts off her nose. And she goes back to her brothers, Karan, Dushan, and Trishira, humiliated. Now, it's interesting in studying politics in the world, we find that a lot of wars have taken place because people feel humiliated. In fact, a lot of the conflicts, even on an individual basis, are because somebody feels humiliated. They feel somehow, as Krishna Kshetri was talking about, human dignity. They feel that their dignity has been damaged in some sense. So what to speak if it was really damaged, you know, if your nose was cut off. So you've really had, you've definitely been insulted. It's not a debate whether you just, will you feel insulted. So she wanted vengeance. And she went to Karan Dushan and she said, you know, kill these brothers. She said, or at least capture them for me. Capture them for me or kill them. So Karan Dushan then went to fight with Ram. And Ram told Lakshman, you go protect Sita in a cave and I'll fight with them. And Karan Dushan and Trishira had brought 14,000 demon soldiers who Ram all defeated single-handedly. One of them, a Kampan, survived, and he went to Ravana and said, Ravana, I should tell you that your whole outpost in Janastan by Panchavati of 14,000 Rakshasas has been killed by one human prince. I think I should let you know what's going on. And Ravana said, well, you know, I'll go and fight with him. And Kampan said, that's not a very good idea. I just think you should be aware of the situation. Ravana's like, okay. Then Sherpanika comes, and in the open court, in front of everybody, says, look what happened to me. Why aren't you defending my honor? She said, my nose got cut off because I was trying to kidnap Sita for you. Sita? Who's Sita? Oh, she's the beautiful wife of Ram. There was never any woman in the world more beautiful. How could there be? She's Lakshmi herself. It's not possible that any human woman or even any demigoddess would be as beautiful as Sita. Beauty in form, beauty in qualities, beauty in nature, beauty in character. She said, if you really want to avenge me, go and kidnap Sita. And once you kidnap Sita, Ram will be so weak and devastated you can kill him. So Ravana goes to his friend Maricha and he says, I want you to help me to kidnap Sita. And here you see Ravana couldn't think outside of the box. He was stuck in a box. He just thought, this Ram is a human man, and what do I have to worry about from him? And Maricha said to Ravana, I've already encountered this Ram before when I was polluting the sacrifice of Vishramrita. And I suggest you have nothing whatsoever to do with him. Leave him alone. Ravana went back, and again Sherpanika incited him, and again he came back. And then he said to Maricha, I don't care. This is what I want to do. And Maricha said, I'm going to be killed by Ram. And then Ravana said, well, your choice. You want to be killed by Ram, or you want to be killed by me? So from a spiritual perspective, you're much better off being killed by Ram than by Ravana. But even from a material perspective, it's more honorable to be killed by an enemy than to be killed by your own government. So Maricha said, all right. He took the form of a golden deer to entice Ram and Lakshman away from the hermitage. And here Sita sees that golden deer. Says, Ram, would you please get it for me? Our exile is almost over. If you capture it alive, we can bring it back as a pet. And even if you have to kill it, we can still use the skin. And Lakshman said, there's something funny about this deer. I don't think it's a normal deer. I think it's a demon. And Ram said, well, if it's a demon, I'll kill it. What is the problem? You stay here and protect Sita. So then Ram went to capture the golden deer. And as he realized the deer was a demon, He shot it, and as he shot it, it again resumed its form. Aricha resumed his real form and cried out in Ram's voice, Sita, Lakshman, help! At which time Sita said to Lakshman, you have to go and protect your brother. And he said, my brother's not in danger. Brother's not in danger. He just said he was in danger. He just cried. That's not my brother's voice. Well, yes, it is. I have to stay here and protect you. Do you have some ill motive? Do you want your brother to die so you can have me? And then he left. We should be careful that in states of fear and anxiety, we don't lose our intelligence. So then Ravana came as a sage. So this also has been happening from the beginning of time, that demons pretend to be devotees. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there's agents of Kali wearing tilak. In America, there's 2,500 crimes every year done by criminals dressed as police officers. In Krishna's pastimes, we have some demons who look like devotees. Who are some of the demons that look like devotees in Krishna's Leela? Putana, who else? Yeah, who is that?
Kali.
Vyomasura. There's another one that Balaram killed. Palombasura. Yeah, so Ravana took the tactic of dressing as a holy man. And Sita then gave him something to eat, at which point he kidnapped her. And he carried her away on his chariot, pulled by... Who pulled Ravana's chariot? It wasn't ordinary horses.
Mules.
Yes, demons that looked like mules. And the chariot could fly in the sky. So as he was traveling, right outside of Panchavati, there was a vulture named Jatayu, who had greeted Ram, Lakshman, and Sita when they first came to Panchavati, and he said that he was an old friend of Dasarath. So when he saw Ravana carrying Sita away, he tried to protect Sita. And he immediately attacked Ravana. And Sita said, my dear Jatayu, do not attack Ravana. You are too old, and he is much stronger than you. And Jatayu was able to destroy Ravana's chariot and kill the mule-like demons. But he wasn't able to rescue Sita. And Ravana cut off his wings and talons, at which point he fell to the earth, bleeding to death. So this is a very nice example of the fact that success in spiritual life is not always measured externally. From an external position, Jatayu was a failure. But from a spiritual position, he was a great success because he had pleased Ram. And when Ram and Lakshman came back to the hermitage and found the giant dying Jatayu, who told them that Ravana had taken Sita and taken her to the south, they gave her a burial just as they would give their own father. So sometimes we become in a very fruitive mentality and think that the test of my pleasing Krishna is whether or not I'm successful externally. But Krishna tells Arjuna, fight for the sake of fighting without considering gain or loss, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor. Fight for Krishna's pleasure. The action itself should be done for Krishna's pleasure. And whether one is a success or failure externally, that is the business of the Lord. So then, of course, Ram and Lakshman were looking everywhere, trying to find Sita. Where is Sita? Where is Sita? And I remember very clearly in 1976 in New York when Srila Prabhupada was visiting for the Rath Yatra, and we were seeing a drama of the Ramayana that was with Lokamangala as Ravana. Lokamangala has now left his body. Lohitaksha as Ram, and Lohitaksha has also now left his body. And Rasagya as Sita, and she's also now left her body. Prabhupada said Rasagya was the best actress in the world. So she and her husband, Lohitaksha, played Ram and Sita. So I remember with these two scenes, with the fighting with Jatayu, and with Ram and Lakshman looking for Sita in the forest, that is, in those two scenes, I was sitting right behind Srila Prabhupada, two or three rows behind Srila Prabhupada. And I remember, at least for those two scenes, I felt like I wasn't in the theater. I wasn't in New York, that we were actually in the Dundaka forest. It was very moving, you know, when Jatayu comes to attack, and Sita says, "No, Jatayu, don't. You are too old, and he is much stronger than you." And still they battle, and Jatayu is dying, and Sita's crying. And then the next scene where Ram and Lakshman find Jatayu, and then they're looking, and Ram says to Lakshman, "If I do not find Sita this very day, I will destroy the entire universe." And the scene ends. It was very dramatic. So as they're looking for Sita, they come to Kadamba. And Kabanda was actually a celestial being who had been cursed, so that his head was pushed down in his torso. When we used to advertise our Ramayana theater, we would go out in costume on the streets of New York, and we had, I think, two or three devotees were inside this costume of Kabanda, and we'd go out in the Kabanda costume and the Ram and Sita, etc. costume. We would do Harinam on the streets of New York in costume, and we'd advertise our play like that. So Kabanda was just this scrunched up creature with these two arms, and he grabs Ram and Lakshman, and they each take out their swords and they cut off Kabanda's arms, at which point he tells them that he was a celestial being who was cursed to have that form and would be released by Ram and Lakshman, and he tells them to burn his body. So they burn his body, at which point he assumes his original form, and he says, "Go find the tribal Shabari. She will tell you how to get help to find your wife." So they traveled to the hermitage of Shabari. And Shabari had been a tribal woman who became a devotee. She became a disciple of Matanga Muni. And when her guru and her other god brothers were to leave the earth and go to Vaikuntha, her guru said, "You should stay on earth because Vishnu, as Ram, is going to come to visit the hermitage." So she had been waiting every day. Every day she was putting flowers on the path and lighting incense and gathering fruits, waiting for Ram to come. So also we have been told by Srila Prabhupada, just chant 16 rounds without offense, follow the regulative principles, attend Mangal Arati, offer your food, and then surely Krishna will come. So we should also, thank you, we should also have that faith that Krishna will come whenever we sit down to chant our japa, whenever we are chanting in kirtan. And we should always have that faith that Prabhupada has promised us. If you do this, Krishna will come. And she was waiting for many, 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 many years. Every single day. I think most of us after a few years would give up, right? So every day she's picking fresh flowers and picking the fruit and decorating everything, and Ram doesn't come. And the next day again, she does. And again, Ram doesn't come. The next day again, and again, and for years and years and years. And then one day, there he was. And of course, if Krishna does come, if Ram does come, please don't send them away. Right? So if you're chanting, 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 and finally Krishna comes and says, "Here I am," don't say, "Go away, please. I'm not very advanced. I don't think I'll come back later when I'm more advanced." So we should be preparing to receive the Lord, and when the Lord comes, we shouldn't consider, am I a tribal, am I a this, am I a that? Whatever I may be, somehow the Lord has come to my home and my heart. So they had some nice discussions about bhakti. She told them how to find Hanuman in Sugriva, and then she asked that she be given permission to leave her body. So they gave that permission, and she attained Vaikuntha. So then, with her directions, they came to where Hanuman and Sugriva were. And Sugriva had been banished by his brother and living in exile, right, over a misunderstanding. And Hanuman, as his main advisor, was living with him. So Ram and Lakshman explained to Hanuman what the situation was, and Hanuman took them to meet Sugriva, at which time they made a pact, they made an agreement, that Ram said to Sugriva, "I will help you get your wife and your kingdom back, and if you help me get my wife back." So Sugriva said, "All right." So we also make this agreement. This is the idea of initiation, that we make an agreement. I'm going to chant 16 rounds. I'm going to follow 4 regulative principles. I'm going to devote myself to Mahaprabhu's mission, to Prabhupada's mission. And then our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, the disciplic succession, ultimately Krishna, say, yes, all right, you will attain prema bhakti. This is our deal. This is our contract. You follow? We have a contract. So interestingly, here, Ram fulfills his end of the contract first. So first he says, I will kill Bali. And of course, Sugriva and Bali looked very much like each other. So he arranged for Sugriva to challenge Bali to a fight. And then he said, while you're fighting, I will kill Bali. And the first time, Ram didn't do anything. And Sugriva was really injured. And he asked Ram, why didn't you do anything? He said, I couldn't tell the difference between you and your brother. Next time you wear something special so I can tell the difference between you. And then he killed Bali. Of course, the gopis criticize Krishna for this. And it's something they bring up in their criticism of him. And they say, you know, we already know about you, Krishna, and how wedded to Dharma you are. When you were Ram, we heard you killed Bali from behind a tree. So, of course, Bali was also very devastated. And as he was dying, he said, Ram, you're the personification of Dharma. Why did you do this? He said, Bali, you are a criminal. You usurped your brother's kingdom, and not only that, you took your brother's wife. He said, the younger brother's wife should be seen as a daughter. He said, for this, you deserve to be killed by the government. And you can be executed by the government. It's not that you have to be killed in battle like some sort of a hero. You can be killed as a criminal. So Bali accepted that, and he surrendered to Ram at the end of his life. So then Sugriva got his kingdom back. And the rainy season started, and so they said, well, we can't look for Sita now, it's raining. Now that doesn't make sense to anybody in Radhadesh. We can't do anything because it's raining. I once asked a devotee from Ireland, you know, how do you get things done in the rain? And she said, if you didn't get things done in the rain, you'd never get anything done, because it's always raining. I remember once I was visiting Mumbai in the rainy season, and the devotees were driving me to the airport. At that time, I was living in North Carolina, in America. And they said, is it the rainy season now in America? And I said, we don't have a rainy season. So they were very silent. For about 5 minutes, there was just silence in the car. And then they said, do you get enough rain? And I said, yeah, we get plenty of rain where I live. And again, there was 5 minutes of silence. And then they said, well, you know, how do you know when to bring an umbrella? So in India, they have a rainy season where it rains torrentially and many things close. Just like, you know, here you may have snow days where the schools are closed because of snow. So in India they have rain days where everything's closed because of rain. The trains aren't going, the buses aren't going. So there was no question of looking for Sita in the rainy season. And during that time, Sugriva, how do we put it politely? I mean, he had been without, and he'd been living austerely for so long, not by choice. And so when he was back in a situation of opulence, he went a little bit overboard and he forgot that he was supposed to fulfill his end of the promise. So it can be like that also in bhakti. One of the anartas is to enjoy the fruits of bhakti. So we surrender to Krishna and he immediately starts fulfilling some of his end of the bargain. Immediately he starts cleansing our heart. Immediately frees us from our sinful reactions. And we can think, oh, now I have a very nice life. Let me just, you know, sit in the temple and enjoy. And I just do a few hours of work every day and I get to eat sweet rice and, you know, it's pretty good. And we forget that we have a contract. We forget that we have to hold up our end of the bargain. So Ram sent Lakshman to find out what was going on. And then Sugriva said, all right, I'll get my armies together and send them out in four directions to look for Sita. Now, because Jatayu had said that Ravana had gone south, so Ram decided that he would put Hanuman in the party going south. And he particularly gave Hanuman his ring because Sita didn't know Hanuman, at least externally. And that way Sita would know that here was Ram's messenger. So Ram was very pleased with Hanuman and sent him on this mission. And they had a lot of obstacles and difficulties in their mission. It's not that just because the Supreme Lord sends you on a mission and gives you his ring that there aren't going to be any problems. Sometimes we think like that also. You know, if it's Krishna's desire, then there won't be any problems. But there are so many problems. They got stuck in a cave of a mystic, and then they ended up being late, and finally they ended up on the shore. And there Jatayu's brother, Sampati, said, well, I see Sita across the water, but how are we going to get across the water? And the different monkeys were saying, well, I think I can jump halfway, but I don't know if I can jump all the way. Some said, well, I can get there, but I can't get back. Prabhupada talks about this in reference to taking sannyas. He said, if you're going to take sannyas, you don't say, maybe I can get halfway. You have to know you can actually do it. So finally, Jambavan reminded Hanuman, you can do it. So when Hanuman jumped, even then there were obstacles. He had to confront demons on the way who tried to impede his progress. So just again, just because it's Krishna's desire, just because it's the order of the Guru, doesn't mean that there's no impediments, doesn't mean there's no difficulty. It's not just that now everything becomes gold-plated with roses, but it's an adventure in which one has to surmount difficulties. And then when Hanuman gets to Lanka, it was hard to find Sita because Ravana had lots and lots of beautiful women and Hanuman hadn't seen Sita before. So first he's looking in the palaces, but he doesn't think any of those women are Sita. Finally he thinks, you know, she wouldn't be in the palace with Ravana. Where is she going to be? And he finds her finally in the Ashok forest, surrounded by demoness guards, and just engage in meditation. As Hanuman's there in a very small form in the tree, he hears Ravana threaten Sita and tell her that if she doesn't voluntarily submit to him in 2 months, that he's going to cook her and eat her for breakfast. Good persuasion, right? Love me or I will eat you. Would you love somebody who threatened to eat you? I don't think so. Krishna's not like that. Krishna doesn't say, you know, I'm going to force you to love me. Krishna wants voluntary, doesn't threaten like that. So after Ravana leaves, then Hanuman waits till the guards are asleep and starts singing to Sita the story of Ram. And at first she's enchanted and then she becomes frightened. She knows Ravana has taken many forms. Maybe again this is Ravana. But when he presents her with Ram's ring, she becomes convinced. Yes, you're actually an emissary, actually the messenger from Ram. And then he says, I will take you back right now to Ram. And she said, no, he should come and rescue me. That would be proper. And then he thinks, all right, I fulfilled my mission. I found where Sita is. I've reassured her that Ram's coming. I can just go back to Ram. But maybe I can do a little bit more. Maybe I can do some reconnaissance and find out about Lanka. And he thinks, probably the best way to do this is to cause some trouble and get captured, and then they'll take me around and I'll see the whole city. I'll be able to see where all the weapons are and everything. So he starts eating, and plus he was kind of hungry because he just jumped across the ocean. You know, he'd had kind of a stressful day. So he was a little hungry and he went in the Ashok Grove and he's eating the fruits there. And he's a big monkey, you know, he's a monkey. You see monkeys, if you've ever been to India where the monkeys are. And they shake things. You know, they like to do that. You see the monkeys, they go in the trees, just, you know, and they're jumping on things. So he didn't just like pick the fruits from the tree, like we would go and just pick the fruits. That's not what monkeys do. They go, so he's shaking the trees and he was pretty strong. So he's knocking over the trees and he was captured. Apparently, he actually had a benediction, he couldn't be captured, but he allowed himself to be captured and taken to Ravana's court, where he tells Ravana, you better make peace with Ram. And Ravana is about to kill him, right? And Bibhishan says, no, no, you can't kill a messenger. So Ravana says, all right, we'll light his tail on fire and drag him through the streets. But Hanuman escapes, and with his tail on fire, he sets fire to the whole city of Lanka. Then he reassures Sita that he's all right, and he returns to Ram. So then Ram and his armies follow Hanuman back to the ocean. But now what are they going to do? They can't all jump over the ocean like Hanuman did. How are they going to get all the armies to rescue Sita? So Ram fasts on the shore of the ocean for 3 days, but the ocean still doesn't come. So he glances at the ocean and starts heating it up. So, you know, when the Lord asks you for something, better to just give it. Right? Don't wait until he makes your life really hot. You know, I think of it like Krishna's in a doorway and he'll be going, you know, come on, come on. Next step in your spiritual life. Come on, over here, over here. I don't want to go. And then, you know, if you don't come, then he starts making your seat hot. Okay, I'm coming, I'm coming. So he started heating up the ocean. And then Ram asked the ocean, please give us facility to make a bridge. So then all of the monkeys, they took rocks and mountain peaks and trees, and they put them in the ocean, and instead of sinking, they floated. And then on this great causeway, all of the monkeys traveled, of course, across to Lanka. Now, when Ravana was told, he didn't take it seriously. He said it was a bunch of monkeys and humans. Why should I bother? He was very proud. Now, we find in our own life, when Krishna shows us that he's supreme, we may still not want to surrender. So this was Ravana's problem. And Ravana fought very quickly in the battle, but he was very quickly defeated, at which point he started sending his sons into battle. And then his sons were, of course, killed one after another after another. And still Ravana kept fighting. And one of his sons, Indrajit, attacked Ram and Lakshman with snake weapon, which made them go unconscious. But Garuda came and ate the snakes. So Ravana was really kind of at the end of his rope. He didn't know what to do. A lot of his sons had been killed. His fancy mystic weapons hadn't been successful. And instead of figuring out, well, maybe I should just surrender. Maybe I should stop trying to enjoy Sita without Ram. That's our whole material disease. When we say we want to be God, it means we want to be the Lord of Lakshmi. We want unlimited wealth, beauty, strength, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. That's what it means we want to be God. We want to own Lakshmi Devi. We want to own Sita. We want to own Radharani. And so Ravana couldn't figure out that this was a bad policy, even after all of his efforts were thwarted. So he thought, well, I do have one relative who's very powerful and whose name is Kumbhakarna. And Kumbhakarna was a giant. And he had this benediction. He had actually asked for Indra's throne, but it had come out wrong as Nidra's throne, as the throne of sleep. So he was awakened from his sleep, and then he went on the battlefield and was crushing the monkeys and eating the monkeys. And they thought, now everything's finished. So sometimes we also think like that. I love the purport where Prabhupada said how, you know, the demons had all these great weapons and fighters, and the monkeys just had some stones and tree trunks. But still they were victorious. So finally Ram comes and kills Kumbhakarna. Then Ravana has one great fighter left named Indrajit. And Indrajit fights with Lakshman. Of course, when Indrajit fights with Lakshman, Lakshman is actually knocked unconscious. And the doctor, the army doctor, says, well, the only medicine that will cure him is far away on a mountain. And Hanuman goes there. And Prabhupada said that Hanuman wasn't that smart, but he was strong. So he couldn't figure out what herb to bring. He thought, Jai Shri Shri. Jai. Thank you for bringing her. That was lovely. So he thought, okay, I'll just bring the whole mountain. Somehow or other, I have to save the life of Lakshman. This great love between Ram and Lakshman. You can see Hanuman there carrying the mountain. So finally, Lakshman is revived, and he has this amazing battle with Indrajit with the help of the brother of Ravana, Bibhishan, who had defected to Ram's camp. And Bibhishan told them, you know, that Indrajit is going to go to a particular place and do this special ceremony which will make you invincible. You have to kill him before then. And so they went, and Lakshman was able to defeat Indrajit. So at this point again, Ravana doesn't say, okay, I surrender. He just comes out, all right, I'm going to fight with Ram myself. At this point, the charioteer of Indra comes and offers Ram a chariot. And the battle is going on in so many ways, and Ram is cutting off Ravana's heads, and they're growing back again, and they just, you know, they can't, Ram is just not making any progress. And finally, his chariot driver says, this is the time to kill him. What you need to do is throw your great weapon in his heart, where his source of nectar is. That's about as fancy technologically as I get. That's about the limit of my technological abilities here. So then Ravana is killed, and then Bibhishan mourns. He says, oh, my dear brother, why were you such a fool that you didn't surrender to Ram? And Ravana's wife, Mandodari, is also mourning. She said, you've made your body fit to be eaten by jackals and your soul fit to go to hell. Why did you try to take the chest of Mother Sita? So now that everything's over, Ram says to Hanuman, go tell Sita to bathe and change her clothes and come see me. So Hanuman goes to get her, and she's so happy, oh, I'm going to see Ram. And he said, well, you should bathe and change. She said, why don't I just go? He says, no, this is Ram's order. So she does that, but when she comes to see Ram, she finds that he's distant from her. And he said, I've saved you out of duty, but, you know, I really don't know what your mentality is. You've been here with Ravana for so long. And she says, all right, Lakshman, go get some wood for a fire. And Ram doesn't say anything. So Lakshman builds a fire, and Sita enters the fire, at which point Agni brings her out unscathed. And it's interesting, the demigods chastise Ram, and they said, what are you doing? Right? Brahma, and they said, why are you doing this to your wife? She's your eternal companion, your eternal consort. And he says, yes, I know that, but for everyone else to see what her situation is. Of course, there's a wonderful story in Chaitanya Charitamrita about this, where there was one Ram Bhakta who refused to eat. I wish we had time to really get into this story, but he invited Lord Chaitanya for lunch, and Lord Chaitanya comes for lunch, and he says, where's the lunch? He says, you don't even seem to be cooking. You've invited me to eat, but you know you haven't even started cooking. And the Brahmin says, I can't cook. Why, what's the problem? And he said, well, Ravana's touched Sita. And so how can there be anything in the how can we eat if Ravana's touched Sita? Lord Chaitanya said, no, Ravana can't touch Sita. The only he can touch simply a shadow of Sita, but not actually Sita. So he convinced the Brahmin, and the Brahmin cooked. And then as Lord Chaitanya was traveling, he came to a temple with the Kurma Purana, which explained that the Sita that Ravana kidnapped was actually a shadow Sita. She was actually another living entity who wanted to marry Ram. There's a whole story. And that that before Ravana kidnapped Sita, there had been a switch. And then later, when Sita entered the fire, ostensibly to be tested, the false Sita went and the real Sita emerged from the fire. And I found it fascinating that Mahaprabhu arranged with the head of the temple to take the original page. I mean, these were books that were handwritten. So he took the original page, he had a copy made and put in the book. And then he backtracked and walked all the way back to show this Brahmana that here's the page from the Kurma Purana. So we find there's some Ram Bhaktas that Mahaprabhu changed to be Krishna Bhaktas, but then there were some Ram Bhaktas that he didn't. And this particular Ram Bhakta, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so much honored his love for Ram that he went and got this original page of the Kurma Purana and backtracked. He was walking. You know, he went all the way back to see him, to show him that really the fire test was for the original Sita to again come to Ram. And now everything is happy. Finally, they go in the airplane of Ravana, Bibhishan and Hanuman and Sugriva and Sita and Ram and Lakshman, and they return to Ayodhya. And as it says in the Bhagavatam, that it looked like the moon with the stars and planets as they were traveling on this airplane of flowers. And then they come off the airplane to finally greet Bharat and Shatrughna, Kaikeyi, Kausalya, and Sumitra. Sitaram ki! Now, we would all like it if the story ended there. Unfortunately, it doesn't. And after some time, happy in Ayodhya, Sita was pregnant. And she said, "My dear Ram, I'd like to visit some sages." And around that time, Ram asked whether or not the people in the kingdom were happy with him. And he found out that some people were criticizing that he was still living with Sita, even though she'd spent such a long time with Ravana. And they felt this set a bad example for people, that somebody could just go and have an affair and come back and their husband would have to accept her. And so he decided that for the good of the kingdom, that he would renounce his pregnant wife. So this is we see over and over again that Ram, as the personification of Dharma, takes this very extreme stance. He takes this stance of going into exile to prove his father truthful. He takes this extreme stance of that's fine. It's fine. As long as she's not screaming, it's fine. That's probably going to be me in 20 years, you know. It's fine. I hope everybody will be nice to me when I'm like that in 20 years. There's never been any religious society in the world that has prospered without children. It's never happened. And if we don't welcome our children when they're little, then we can't be surprised if when they're old they want to go away. So Ram set this example that the ruler, the leaders of society, should be willing to sacrifice their own personal happiness for the good of the country, to set an example. Of course, we have the opposite with modern leaders, where there's actually a scandal and they still hold on to their position. You know, and we've had this problem, we have to say honestly, in ISKCON also, that we'll have some leader who's involved in a scandal and they just deny it, right? They just deny it and deny it and deny it and try to hold on to their position, hold on to their position. Whereas with Ramchandra, there wasn't a scandal. It was innocence, but just, people think there's a scandal. And then, of course, Sita went to the ashram of Valmiki Muni where Love and Kush were born, and there Valmiki taught them the Ramayana, and later Sita entered into the earth. So I thought now what we'd do.